We've all done it. Stock our fridge with leafy greens and good intentions, only to have our future self sacrifice quality nutrition for the convenience of takeout. Keep your body and mind nourished all day with a whole body meal shake from Kachava. It's got 25 grams of protein, 6 grams of fiber, greens, adaptogens, and so much more. But the best part? It actually tastes delicious. With 6 indulgent flavors to choose from, it's easy to make a superfood-packed shake. From chocolate, vanilla, and chai, to matcha, coconut acai, and strawberry, you've got endless ways to personalize your Kachava. Whether you prefer it straight up or enjoy adding fruit, peanut butter, nut milk, or even iced coffee, with every 2 scoops of Kachava, you're getting 85 plus superfoods, nutrients, and plant-based ingredients. Your future self will thank you. Go to kachava.com and use code SMOOTHIE for 15% off your next order. That's Kachava, K-A-C-H-A-V-A.com, code SMOOTHIE for 15% off. We've all done it. Stock our fridge with leafy greens and good intentions, only to have our future self sacrifice quality nutrition for the convenience of takeout. Keep your body and mind nourished all day with a whole body meal shake from Kachava. It's got 25 grams of protein, 6 grams of fiber, greens, adaptogens, and so much more. But the best part? It actually tastes delicious. With 6 indulgent flavors to choose from, it's easy to make a superfood-packed shake. From chocolate, vanilla, and chai, to matcha, coconut acai, and strawberry, you've got endless ways to personalize your Kachava. Whether you prefer it straight up or enjoy adding fruit, peanut butter, nut milk, or even iced coffee, with every 2 scoops of Kachava, you're getting 85 plus superfoods, nutrients, and plant-based ingredients. Your future self will thank you. Go to kachava.com and use code Pandora for 15% off your next order. That's Kachava, K-A-C-H-A-V-A.com, code Pandora for 15% off.
What is up, crime crew? Welcome to Murder Unscripted's Forensic Fridays. Every other Friday, we bring you a bite-sized dose of true crime, shorter than our full-length Tuesday episodes, but still packed with the same jaw-dropping chaos and deadly detail. I'm Ed, and today I'm sharing the incredibly sad story of the double homicide of Jack and Linda Myers. For this installment of MU's Forensic Fridays, we're heading to Dark County, Ohio, and it's the morning of March 27th, 2003. A woman named Marlene Harris, she's a preschool teacher at the Oakland Church of the Brethren. And around 9:15 a.m., the door to the classroom swings open and in runs one of the preschool students, 4-year-old Damian Huffman. And Damian is clearly in distress. Marlene can literally see it on his face. Not only is Damian an hour late for school, he's alone. Marlene always sees him being dropped off by his great-grandparents, Jack and Linda Myers. And Marlene is alarmed to see not only is the boy wearing pajamas, but the PJs are covered in something red. And it takes her brain a second to process that it's blood all over this boy's pajamas. Marlene tries asking Damian what happened, and all he tells her that his grandparents are melting. She asks Damian how he got to school, and he tells her he ran. This brave little guy ran over a mile all by himself to get to preschool. So Marlene immediately calls 911. She explains the situation as best as she possibly can. And police are immediately dispatched, but really the only information they have is that there's probably a disturbance at the home of Jack and Linda Myers. And because there are so many questions about what happened, police instruct the daycare to go into lockdown. They're afraid that if somebody had in fact hurt Jack and Linda, that same person could be trying to get after Damian next. So at the Myers property, Detective Mark Whitaker and Detective Rodney Baker of the Dark County PD, they're first on the scene. And again, these guys have no knowledge of what they're going to be walking into, other than this little boy saying his grandparents are melting. So when they approach the home, they notice the front door is wide open. Never a good sign. So they carefully go inside, and one of the first things they notice is that there's no signs of a struggle. There's no forced entry, there's no signs of a robbery. It's quiet. Like, eerily quiet. And this whole time they've been calling out for the Myers, but there's no response. So one of the officers then heads into the master bedroom, which is located on the first floor. And he's completely taken aback by what he sees. The entire room is bathed in blood. Lying in the bed are the bodies of Jack and Linda Myers. Both had been shot in the head. And given the amount of blood, it was clear the couple was deceased. So the officers proceed room to room to clear the house to make sure the killer's not still there, and it is in fact empty. However, it was clear the killer had gone up to the second floor as there was blood not only in Damien's room, but even on his bed. So they believe the blood on the bed had come from the killer brushing up against the bed while he had blood on his own clothing. Detective Whitaker would later say this was the goriest scene he'd ever witnessed in his career. So let's talk about these victims for a minute. 51-year-old Jack Myers and his 55-year-old wife, Linda. So Jack and Linda had dated for several years before eventually getting hitched in 1996. They'd both been married previously, and they did have grown children from those previous relationships. Linda had three daughters, Darlene, Georgia Lynn, and Kim, and Jack had two sons, Travis and Greg. And Jack lived on a large 40-acre farm in Bradford, Ohio, which is about 2 hours north of Cincinnati. That's where we're talking about. And the Myers had been raising their 4-year-old great-grandson, Damien, since he was born, because Linda's granddaughter, Amber, had gotten pregnant with Damien when she was just 16, and she knew she was in no position to care for this baby. So Jack and Linda told Amber that she and Damien could come live with them on their farm. And the couple happily stepped in to care for Damien and ensure that he was raised in a safe, loving, happy environment. Sources say that Jack and Damien were absolute best friends. They would spend hours on Jack's tractor just riding around the farm. And Amber had moved out and eventually got married, and the plan was for Damien to join her and her new husband in the next couple months. The Myers were obviously going to miss Damien, but they knew they would still be able to see him all the time because family was literally the most important thing to the Myers. They loved hosting family get-togethers with the kids and the grandkids, and everyone just loved spending time on this beautiful farm. However, there was one member of the group that had no interest in becoming part of this 21st century Brady Bunch, and that was Jack's oldest son, Travis. At the time of our case, Jack and Linda's farm was no longer an active one, but in the years prior, it was a prospering hog farm. And Jack and Travis ran this farm and ultimately had a disagreement about the finances. Travis believed he deserved more than what Jack was paying him. So eventually, Travis got so angry that he cut ties with his father and went on to live with his mother in Arizona. And Travis had been estranged from Jack ever since, including missing the wedding between his father and Linda, which broke Jack's heart. But they were so grateful to have the support of their other kids, and it is important to note that Jack and his younger son, Greg, they were extremely close. They had a fantastic relationship. Greg was even the best man at Jack and Linda's wedding, so he shared a great relationship with Linda as well. And Greg had lived with the couple for a few years before eventually moving out, got married, and started a family of his own. Lastly, I'll mention that Jack and Linda Myers were well known in their local community. The couple ran a social general store in town that doubled as a pizza parlor, and they also owned a few rental properties. In addition, Jack worked shifts at a local factory, and he would purchase old cars, fix them up, and resell them. And it was noted that Jack would often sell these cars to local people that he would essentially extend credit to. People who were down on their luck maybe couldn't afford a car, so he would offer installments. So Jack and Linda were known to be this incredibly kind, generous, hardworking, and extremely family-focused couple. So how on earth did Jack and Linda end up murdered? And who would have wanted this amazing couple dead? Before police can figure that out, they need to continue processing this horrifically gory crime scene. And they're able to deduce that Jack was killed first, as he was lying on his stomach and had been shot in the back of his head. Unfortunately, Linda must have woken up because she had gunshot wounds to her hands and face, meaning she most likely had attempted to defend herself. And it would later be determined that Jack and Linda had been killed sometime between 4 and 6 a.m. The murder weapon was a shotgun, and the killer used a homemade silencer, which he had left behind. And this silencer was made of quilt and, you know, like the batting, the stuffing that goes in a quilt, and masking tape. So while police investigate the home, they do see a few things that really stand out to them. And first of all was the fact that nothing had been stolen. Electronics and jewelry and other expensive items were laying in plain sight or exactly where they were supposed to be. And to even further rule out this robbery motive, there was a bank deposit bag in the kitchen which had hundreds of dollars that they made from the pizza shop and the market. So why on earth wouldn't somebody take that? What is the motive here? So when investigators search outside, they notice some tire prints next to the driveway. And another thing that stood out, there was a basement window broken. And next to this window was a shoe print right there in the mud. So between this broken window and the fact that the basement door had essentially been wide open, police believe their killer had broken through that basement window and come upstairs to the main living level. So while the scene is still being processed, it's also discovered that the phone lines had been cut, which tells me this was a cold, calculated, premeditated attack. It's probably something personal. So when police are at this home, one of the neighbors gets home from work and tells them that they had some information. So this neighbor explains that earlier that morning, she was leaving for work about 4:40, and she saw a minivan backing out of the Myers driveway. She knew that neither Jack or Linda owned a minivan, so it kind of stuck out to her that this unfamiliar vehicle was in their driveway at such an odd time of day. Unfortunately, because it was so dark out, she couldn't get any more information. She couldn't see if any who was driving. She couldn't get the make, the model, the color. She just knew it was a minivan. So while the bodies are being autopsied and the crime scene is being processed, Detective Sergeant Mike Burns is given the unenviable task of interviewing 4-year-old Damien. And at this point, Damien is in protective custody because they're not allowing him to see his mother or the rest of the family because they're not sure who the killer is. Somebody could still be wanting to hurt him. So the detective who's interviewed for several shows, including In Ice Cold Blood with the incredible Ice-T, he sits down with Damien and says that this was the first time in his career that he'd been tasked with interviewing someone so young who'd been through something so traumatizing and horrific. So the detective begins by interacting with Damien, playing with him, talking about things that are completely unrelated to the case, just to get this kid to understand that he's somewhere safe and he can let his guard down and he can tell police what really happened. And this interview with Damien was recorded and played on the In Ice Cold Blood episode, which is incredibly jarring because you can hear this sweet little voice recounting this absolutely horrific scene that he endured. And Damien tells the detectives that he woke up around 8:45 in the morning and realized he was late for school. What four-year-old does that? So he got out of bed and went to look for his great-grandparents, as they're the ones that normally woke him up, fed him breakfast, and got him off to school. And Damien went into their bedroom and he said, quote, "They was laying in bed, melted," end quote. Damien says he tried to wake Linda up, but he couldn't. So he went around to the other side of the bed to wake up Jack. He tells the detective that there was so much blood, and he took a tissue at one point from the nightstand and tried to wipe Jack's face off. Heartbreaking. And in the TV show I mentioned, the detective is recounting this conversation, and even all these years later, it's clear that this specific part of the story still resonates with him and it still haunts him. And seriously, who can blame him? So Damien goes on to say that he tried calling 911, but as we know, the phone lines were cut. And this is when Damien, knowing that he needs to get help, ran a mile to his preschool. So when the detective asks Damien if there's anything he can remember from the night before or early that morning, he proceeds to tell the detective a story straight out of your worst nightmares. He says that he had woken up early that morning to someone coming into his room. He wasn't sure who it was, so he pretended to be asleep. And at some point, he opened his eyes just for a little peek, and he says he saw a green dragon standing over his bed. And police are obviously not sure what to make of this, except to say they believed whoever Damien saw was the killer, especially because Damien told police that he had not gone back to his room after he discovered the bodies. So the blood that was found in his bedroom, it could not have been transferred from him, it came from the killer. So Detective Burns is finished speaking with Damien. He's placed in foster care, and police continue their investigation. And while speaking with friends and family, investigators learn about Jack's strained relationship with his oldest son, 28-year-old Travis. Travis obviously quickly rises to the top of the suspect list, and this is somebody they want to speak to immediately. But his whereabouts are unknown, so police go to speak with Jack's other son, 25-year-old Greg Myers. And when they get to Greg's home, detectives are completely shocked to discover that not only does Greg know where Travis is, he's here. He's at Greg's house, which means their prime suspect was in the area of the murders when they took place. So Travis is brought in for questioning, and he admits there is no love lost between he and his father, but he says he didn't kill him. And after confirming Travis's alibi, believe he said something to the effect of, "I was home, sleeping," and his girlfriend did vouch for him. But they also had him take a voice stress test, which is basically a computer test that measures micro tremors in someone's voice that can indicate deception. And amazingly, it looks like Travis is telling the truth. So investigators for the time being have to say goodbye to their biggest lead and start from scratch. So the day after the murder, a phone call comes into the police station, and it's a local man named John Hemmeldollar. And John tells investigators that just a few days before the murders, he had a conversation with Greg Myers. And Greg had asked John if he knew where he could get a gun. When John asked why, Greg went on this tirade about how angry he was with his father and wanted to kill him. And investigators are stunned. They were still thinking that Travis had been behind the murders the whole time, but they never suspected that the shy and mild-mannered son Greg could be behind it. They would soon find that there was so much more to Greg than meets the eye. Specifically, a drug and alcohol addiction that had not only torn apart his marriage, but Greg was also about to lose his house. So police speak to Greg, and he is clearly nervous, with good reason, because he admits that he knows he would get the farm if something happened to Jack and Linda, which gives investigators even more reason to suspect him. And while they're there, they also speak with Greg's girlfriend, who admits that the morning of the murders, Greg was gone when she woke up. She had tried calling him at 4:36 a.m., and there was no answer. So don't forget that the neighbor saw that unknown minivan at 4:40 a.m., so just 4 minutes later. So after searching Greg's home, police discover that he also owns a silver minivan, and even more damning, when they test the tires, they match exactly to the prints that were found just off the driveway. So on the evening of March 29th, Greg was arrested on two counts of murder in the double homicide of Jack and Linda Myers. and the rest of the family is obviously in complete shock that Greg is suspected of killing his own parents. And when they search through Greg's personal belongings, they don't find anything overly suspicious, but police do find a Walmart gift card. Remember that for later. Obviously, police know they need more evidence. This is a clearly circumstantial case at this point, so they begin traveling the route between the farmhouse and Greg's job, where he claims to have been during the murders. And investigators are searching the route, and as they're crossing the Stillwater River, there's one eagle-eyed detective that sees something in the water, a 12-gauge shotgun. And when they recover the weapon, they discover that the serial number had been filed off, so it's sent to the lab. Maybe they can recover it, maybe not, but either way, this is a huge development given that the couple was killed with a shotgun. And the next day, they continue searching the river, and that's when they spot it. A black trash bag in a shallow part of the river. It's caught up in some brush. And Detective Whitaker literally jumped into the river and grabs this trash bag. He opens it up, and that's when they knew they had the smoking gun. So in this bag, there were latex gloves, 12-gauge shotgun shells, tennis shoes that end up matching the footprints found at the house, and possibly the most damning of all, a green tracksuit, which instantly made investigators harken back to Damien's comments in that interview that there was a green dragon in his room. Terrifying. But police still wanted more. So they start hitting up all these local big box stores, especially Walmart, and they find that not only did a man purchase the exact same ammo used in the murders, but that ammo was purchased with a gift card. The very same gift card that was found in Greg's wallet. And even more evidence, Greg was caught on surveillance camera making these purchases with his two young children in tow. How sick. So the lab was able to pull a perfect fingerprint from these gloves, even though it had been in the water for 5 days. And the right index fingerprint was a match to Greg Myers. And police were ecstatic, but they were about to discover the icing on this murderous cake. Amazingly, forensic examiners were able to restore the serial numbers of that shotgun. So what they do is they hit the newspapers and they search for any local ads that ran around that time. And they track down a man who had recently sold his 12-gauge shotgun. And luckily, this man kept meticulous paperwork so he could prove exactly who he sold that shotgun to, and it was a man named Greg Myers on March 25th, 2 days before he murdered his father and stepmother in cold blood. Despite the overwhelming evidence against him, Greg refused to accept accountability and continues to maintain his innocence. And his trial began in April of 2004 with the prosecutor telling the court that due to Greg's addictions, he was about to lose his home. So shortly before the murders, he had asked his father for money, and Jack, who was exhausted from bailing his son out because of his drug habit, he handed down some tough love and he said, "No, you're not getting anything else from me." So, knowing what he stood to inherit, Greg took the ultimate revenge. After days of testimony on April 27, 2004, it took a jury only 8 hours to determine that Greg was guilty of 2 counts of aggravated murder. On April 29th, Greg Myers was sentenced to 2 life terms in prison without the possibility of parole. The old double LWAP. So it doesn't get much worse than a son who knowingly went out to kill his father and stepmother, but to know that he was about to kill Damien as well, that's demonic. And Linda's family continues to grieve this loss, and it would take years of therapy for Damien to process what he witnessed that day in 2003. But I am happy to say that, according to sources, Damien has grown into a smart, hardworking, well-adjusted young man. So bravo to him. What a brave little kid. And these murders, like most, were beyond senseless, and I would absolutely love to hear your thoughts, guys. And you can hit us up on socials. We are at Murder Unscripted. You can email us at murderunscriptedpod@gmail.com, or we can start a conversation on our Reddit page. We love interacting with our fans, so just search Murder Unscripted and hit us up. That's all for this week's MU Forensic Fridays. So until next time, stay safe, stay curious, and stay unscripted.